Sri Aurobindo, The Synthesis of Yoga. Part 1, The Yoga of Divine Works. Continuing with Chapter 11, Master of the Work, on page 248. There are gradations in this last integralizing movement, for it cannot be done at once or without long approaches that bring it progressively nearer and make it at last possible. The first attitude to be taken is to cease to regard ourselves as the worker and firmly to realize that we are only one instrument of the cosmic force. At first, it is not the one force, but many cosmic forces that seem to move us. But these may be turned into feeders of the ego, and this vision liberates the mind, but not the rest of the nature. Even when we become aware of all as the working of one cosmic force and of the divine behind it, that too need not liberate. If the egoism of the worker disappears, the egoism of the instrument may replace it or else prolong it in a disguise. The life of the world has been full of instances of egoism of this kind, and it can be more engrossing and enormous than any other. There is the same danger in yoga. A man becomes a leader of men, or eminent in a large or lesser circle, and feels himself full of a power that he knows to be beyond his own ego force. He may be aware of a fate acting through him, or a will mysterious and unfathomable, or a light within of great brilliance. There are extraordinary results of his thoughts, his actions, or his creative genius. He effects some tremendous destruction that clears the path for humanity, or some great construction that becomes its momentary resting place. He is a scourge, or he is a bringer of light and healing, a creator of beauty, or a messenger of knowledge. Or, if his work and its effects are on a lesser scale and have a limited field, still they are attended by the strong sense that he is an instrument and chosen for his mission or his labor. Men who have this destiny and these powers come easily to believe and declare themselves to be mere instruments in the hand of God or of fate. But even in the declaration, we can see that there can intrude or take refuge an intenser and more exaggerated egoism than ordinary men have the courage to assert or the strength to house within them. And often, if men of this kind speak of God, it is to erect an image of him, which is really nothing but a huge shadow of themselves or their own nature, a sustaining deific essence of their own type of will and thought and quality and force. This magnified image of their ego is the master whom they serve. This happens only too often in yoga to strong but crude vital natures or minds too easily exalted when they allow ambition, pride, or the desire of greatness to enter into their spiritual seeking and vitiate its purity of motive. A magnified ego stands between them and their true being and grasps for its own personal purpose the strength from a greater unseen power, divine or undivine, acting through them of which they become vaguely or intensely aware. An intellectual perception or vital sense of a force greater than ours and of ourselves as moved by it is not sufficient to liberate from the ego. This perception, this sense of a greater power in us or above and moving us, is not a hallucination or a megalomania. Those who thus feel and see have a larger sight than ordinary men and have advanced a step beyond the limited physical intelligence. But theirs is not the plenary vision or the direct experience. For, because they are not clear in mind and aware in the soul, because their awakening is more in the vital parts than into the spiritual substance of self, they cannot be the conscious instruments of the divine or come face to face with the master, but are used through their fallible and imperfect nature. The most they see of the divinity is a fate or a cosmic force, or else they give his name to a limited godhead, or worse, to a titanic or demoniac power that veils him. Even certain religious founders have erected the image of the god of a sect or a national god, or a power of terror and punishment, or a newman of sattvic love and mercy and virtue, and seem not to have seen the one and eternal. The divine accepts the image they make of him and does his work in them through that medium, but since the one force is felt and acts in their imperfect nature, but more intensely than in others, the motive principle of egoism, too, can be more intense in them than in others. An exalted rajasic or sattvic ego still holds them and stands between them and the integral truth. Even this is something, a beginning, although far from the true and perfect experience. A much worse thing may befall those who break something of the human bonds but have not purity and have not the knowledge. For they may become instruments, but not of the divine. Too often, using his name, they serve unconsciously his masks and black contraries, the powers of darkness. Our nature must house the cosmic force, but not in its lower aspect or in its rajasic or sattvic movement. It must serve the universal will, but in the light of a greater liberating knowledge. There must be no egoism of any kind in the attitude of the instrument, even when we are fully conscious of the greatness of the force within us. Every man is knowingly or unknowingly the instrument of a universal power. And apart from the inner presence, there is no such essential difference between one action and another, one kind of instrumentation and another, as would warrant the folly of an egoistic pride. The difference between knowledge and ignorance is a grace of the spirit. The breath, divine power, blows where it lists and fills today one and tomorrow another with the word or the puissance. If the potter shapes one pot more perfectly than another, the merit lies not in the vessel, but the maker. The attitude of our mind must not be, "This is my strength," or "Behold God's power in me," but rather, "A divine power works in this mind and body, and it is the same that works in all men, and in the animal, in the plant, and in the metal, in conscious and living things, and in things apparently inconscient and inanimate." This large view of the one working in all, and of the whole world as the equal instrument of a divine action and gradual self-expression, if it becomes our entire experience, will help to eliminate all rajasic egoism out of us, and even the sattvic ego sense will begin to pass away from our nature. The elimination of this form of ego leads straight towards the true instrumental action, which is the essence of a perfect karma yoga. For while we cherish the instrumental ego, we may pretend to ourselves that we are conscious instruments of the divine, but in reality, we are trying to make of the divine Shakti an instrument of our own desires or our egoistic purpose. And even if the ego is subjected but not eliminated, we may indeed be engines of the divine work, but we shall be imperfect tools and deflect or impair the working by our mental errors, our vital distortions, or the obstinate incapacities of our physical nature. If this ego disappears, then we can truly become not only pure instruments consciously consenting to every turn of the divine hand that moves us, but aware of our true nature, conscious portions of the One Eternal and Infinite, put out in herself for her works by the Supreme Shakti. There is another greater step to be taken after the surrender of our instrumental ego to the Divine Shakti. It is not enough to know her as the one cosmic force that moves us and all creatures on the planes of mind, life, and matter. For this is the lower nature. And although the divine knowledge, light, power are there concealed and at work in this ignorance and can break partly its veil and manifest something of their true character or descend from above and uplift these inferior workings, yet, even if we realize the One in a spiritualized mind, a spiritualized life movement, a spiritualized body consciousness, an imperfection remains in the dynamic parts. There is a stumbling response to the Supreme Power, a veil over the face of the Divine, a constant mixture of the ignorance. It is only when we open to the Divine Shakti and the truth of her force, which transcends this lower prakriti, that we can be perfect instruments of her power and knowledge. Not only liberation, but perfection must be the aim of the Kama Yoga. The divine works through our nature and according to our nature. If our nature is imperfect, the work also will be imperfect, mixed, inadequate. Even it may be marred by gross errors, falsehoods, moral weaknesses, diverting influences. The work of the divine will be done in us even then, but according to our weakness, not according to the strength and purity of its source. If ours were not an integral yoga, if we sought only the liberation of the self within us, or the motionless existence of Purusha separated from Prakriti, this dynamic imperfection might not matter. Calm, untroubled, not depressed, not elated, refusing to accept the perfection or imperfection, fault or merit, sin or virtue as ours, perceiving that it is the modes of nature working in the field of her modes that make this mixture, we could withdraw into the silence of the spirit and, pure, untouched, witness only the workings of Prakriti. But in an integral realization, this can only be a step on the way, not our last resting place. For we aim at the divine realization not only in the immobility of the spirit, but also in the movement of nature. And this cannot be altogether until we can feel the presence and power of the divine in every step, motion, figure of our activities, in every turn of our will, in every thought, feeling, and impulse. No doubt, we can feel that in essence, even in the nature of the ignorant, but it is the divine power and presence in a disguise, a diminution, an inferior figure. Ours is a greater demand, that our nature shall be a power of the divine in the truth of the divine, in the light, in the force of the eternal self-conscious will, in the wideness of the sempiternal knowledge. After the removal of the veil of ego, the removal of the veil of nature and her inferior modes that govern our mind, life, and body. As soon as the limits of the ego begin to fade, we see how that veil is constituted and detect the action of cosmic nature in us. And in or behind cosmic nature, we sense the presence of the cosmic self and the dynamis of the world pervading Ishvara. The master of the instrument stands behind all this working. And even within the working, there is his touch and the drive of a great guiding or disposing influence. It is no longer ego or ego force that we serve. We obey the world master and his evolutionary impulse. At every step, we can say in the language of the Sanskrit verse, even as I am appointed by thee, seated in my heart, so, O Lord, I act. But still, this action may be of two very different kinds. One only illumined, the other transformed and uplifted into a greater supernature. For we may keep on in the way of action upheld and followed by our nature, when by her and her illusion of egoism we were turned as if mounted on a machine. But now, with a perfect understanding of the mechanism and its utilization for his world purposes by the Master of Works, whom we feel behind it. This is indeed as far as even many great yogis have reached on the levels of spiritualized mind. But it need not be so always, for there is a greater supramental possibility. It is possible to rise beyond spiritualized mind and to act spontaneously in the living presence of the original divine truth force of the Supreme Mother. Our motion one with her motion and merged in it. Our will one with her will. Our energy absolved in her energy. We shall feel her working through us as the divine manifest in a supreme wisdom power. And we shall be aware of the transformed mind, life, and body only as the channels of a supreme light and force beyond them, infallible in its steps, because transcendent and total in its knowledge. Of this light and force, we shall not only be the recipients, channels, instruments, but become a part of it in a supreme, uplifted, abiding experience. Already, before we reach this last perfection, we can have the union with the divine in works, in its extreme wideness, if not yet on its most luminous heights. For we perceive no longer merely nature or the modes of nature, but become conscious in our physical movements, in our nervous and vital reactions, in our mental workings, of a force greater than body, mind, and life, which takes hold of our limited instruments and drives all their motion. There is no longer the sense of ourselves moving, thinking, or feeling, but of that moving feeling and thinking in us, This force that we feel is the universal force of the divine, which, veiled or unveiled, acting directly or permitting the use of its powers by beings in the cosmos, is the one energy that alone exists and alone makes universal or individual action possible. For this force is the divine itself in the body of its power. All is that: power of act, power of thought and knowledge, power of mastery and enjoyment, power of love. Conscious always and in everything, in ourselves and in others, of the master of works possessing, inhabiting, enjoying through this force that is himself, becoming through it all existences and all happenings, we shall have arrived at the divine union through works and achieved by that fulfillment in works all that others have gained through absolute devotion or through pure knowledge. But there is still another step that calls us, an ascent out of this cosmic identity into the identity of the divine transcendence. The master of our works and our being is not merely a Godhead here within us, nor is he merely a cosmic spirit or some kind of universal power. The world and the divine are not one and the same thing, as a certain kind of pantheistic thinking would like to believe. The world is an emanation. It depends upon something that manifests in it but is not limited by it. The divine is not here alone. There is a beyond, an eternal transcendence. The individual being also, in its spiritual part, is not a formation in the cosmic existence. Our ego, our mind, our life, our body are that. But the immutable spirit, the imperishable soul in us, has come out of the transcendence.